The new literacies, as they have been labeled, this is David Booth writing, who's a rather prominent voice in this field. The new literacies are concerned with multimodal texts, such as comics, magazines, newspapers, the internet, email, graphics, video, and sound. Together, these texts fill the lives of our students, and meaning accrues as students combine the messages from the different media into their own construct of the world. And as media proliferate, I might comment, the need rises for media study as transformations of perception and sensibility. We have to know what each ingredient of the stew does to the stew and to the palate of the eater. Remember, many males stop reading fiction at around 12 or 13. Another new development. One feature of the new multimedia and multimodal literacy is, of course, participation. And participation reaches such intense levels that it begins to resemble the sort of thing that Eric Havelock was talking about when he discussed mimesis in the preliterate world of Greece. Here's a little more from Mr. Booth. When students are inside the experience, needing to read and write in order to come to grips with the issues and concerns being discussed and examined, when texts are being interpreted or constructed as part of the learning process, then I can sense that a literacy event is happening, he declares. The young person needs not only to inhabit the words and images, but to see herself as a performer of what she has learned, representing and owning the learning. In effect, she herself becomes the literacy, and she reads and writes with her whole self, her body, her emotions, her background as a daughter and student and citizen. She sits in school beside her family members and she reads every text she meets alongside them inside her cultural surround. Literacy, he says, is constructed through identity. By Jigmat's mimesis. Havelock thought this was a feature of the pre-literate experience of the poets and the poems. As a poet recited, the audience, we would say, is rapt, but so totally rapt in the experience that you lose all sense of self, all sense of now, all sense of time, of being. You simply move into and become one of the characters in the poem. And whatever that character experiences or does, you experience or do as completely as if you actually did it physically. The character may die, and you don't. You don't bleed right there on the spot, but you do everything else. You feel it that intensely, that totally. And that, he says, is, of course, a total giving of yourself to the experience and to the moment. And this is the enemy of the new sciences of logic and dialectics and philosophy. And for that reason, Plato took the poets on in the Republic and went after them. And Aristotle had so much trouble with his hearers and had to invent things like syllogisms just to pull them out of those mental habits. Multiple literacies mean something else. It means we have to retrieve and refurbish and begin to train the generalist. The grammarian of old was a polymath, that is, a polylinguist. Each literacy is a mode of perception, a different posture of the imagination, and that speaks to a basic need for a really fundamental and extensive training of sensibility and of critical awareness. An autistic wrote, "My language is not about designing words or even visual symbols for people to interpret. It is about being in constant conversation with every aspect of my environment, reacting to all parts of my surroundings." Sounds very much like very involved and non-objective experience. A basic feature of language that we discovered long ago And I don't claim the discovery is original. All languages are organs of perception. Like eye or ear or tongue, a living language is an organ of perception. And its eye, ear, nose, throat, doctor is the poet. The 20th century produced some prodigies of these eye, ear, nose, throat doctors, but there hasn't been an awful lot of follow-up. Academic poetry is pretty flaccid. Elsewhere isn't much better. I'd say today, generally, poetics has floundered, but somebody will come along sooner or later. Very few stand out, the best of a mediocre lot. But the crucible is boiling away like mad. It isn't that nothing is happening. All sorts of things are happening, but not up there. The crucible is just churning out news day by day. It's on the musical side of language. The big news is now down in hip-hop and in rap. They are doing things with words and with language the poets haven't done for 2,000 years. They're inventing from first principles, or no principles, things that it took the oral poets centuries to learn. And if you listen to these sounds, right, you'll hear. Exactly. Of course, we can save them 50 or 100 years of work in a couple of weeks by looking at some of what we know about oral poetry. Where did that come in? One effect of these developments is to broaden immensely the available style, to free up aspects of words for poets to deploy. That is, poetry returns to performance and multimedia. And therefore, it can be based in any one, but must always have one foot in language. One foot in language, one foot in other media, but always one foot in language. And then again, media are languages. A few thoughts about English, because we're all English speakers, at this moment anyway. English is the most heterodox of languages. It welcomes new words, unlike many another, which doesn't. It's kind of linguistic embodiment of multiculturalism. And therefore, it preserves the spelling. It's often been a mystery. Why do we do this? Why don't we just... Because we are a multicultural language, we allow our words to bring their identity with them and wear it on their sleeves. This also gives us a handy route to etymology, and that is part of the grammatical impulse. French, by contrast, resists new words, and this is instinctive. It isn't a matter of someone long ago said, thou shalt not allow new words into the language. I'd say instead the French have a very deep sense of the language as an organ of perception, and are very wary of it, any kind of pollution of those senses. Language is very much a key to their sense of corporate being, to their identity. And now to reprise a thought, I'm nearing the end, so hang on. Communication in the ancient world, I mentioned last time, took three forms. Let me give a bit of background. With the onset of writing changed everything. It made words visible. And it introduced a new kind of word, the thinking, the word in the mind. The moment writing hit Greece, they came up with three sciences of the word. The spoken word, the science was rhetoric, and technicians are rhetoricians. The word in the mind, the science of thinking, and of thinking in the right way. And this is the whole area, a whole discipline called dialectic, logic, philosophy. And the science of the written word. The word in writing, whether the writing is on the wall or on the page. They read the book of nature, and they read the book of the written book. This was the result of breaking up the oral encyclopedia. the Agoclius Pedaea, which the poets had very carefully assembled over the ages. The oral encyclopedia is back with us now. It's on the Internet. The Internet is actually an encyclopedia of every human art and science. It's all there. Or if it isn't, hang on. Next week we'll have a few more sites up and the rest will be up. The world of literacies is the world of grammarians' manque and of much duplication of effort. These people are busy trying to reinvent grammar, driven by the need for what it's always provided. Encyclopedism, and training in the interpretation of texts of all kinds, whether written or whatever. They considered the world itself a text open to reading and interpretation, and the grammarian roamed freely across all of the arts and all of the sciences. He was an expert reader. If it was in writing of any kind, he could read it. That was his job. A child learns to read the book of nature with names. The first literacy. In the arts, painting, music, sculpture, poetics of any kind, the literacies in these areas are the styles. Arts equal a side door into cultural imagination. And once you get in that circuit, you discover that literacies are the styles, are the media, are the cultures. One set of skills and techniques takes you into all of these areas. One result of comparative literacy is ecological awareness. Some of these new forms, in other words, we may find as we parse their grammar, may be toxic to us culturally or in some other way. In an era of instantaneous change and very rapid, that is, rapid succession of changes, such could be a survival skill. Grammar began with understanding, or the grammarians began with the understanding that there were multiple literacies. Grammar didn't start with just one. It started with minimum two, the Book of Nature and the written book. But the written book also, that these were parallel texts. So grammarians practiced comparative literacy from the beginning. We have 2,000 years of practice of this skill, this technique. We need now to import it into the present or to reinvent it for ourselves. Literacies need to be studied in pairs. It's a basic technique. My father and Harley Parker, a painter, wrote a book called Through the Vanishing Point, Space in Poetry and Painting, and they took two literacies, painting and poetry, and explored them throughout the book. In fact, let me see, at one point, right on page 2, the writers say, "It is our purpose to provide a contemporary audience with the tools for discovery of a common ground amongst the manifestations of art in the world by working two literacies and using each one as a foil or a probe for the other." The grammarian was necessarily an encyclopedist. Another pair of literacies, the Old Testament and the New Testament, by the way. Another, sacred and profane. The Renaissance man, well, Renaissance is a constant pressure acting on our psyches. We're in the middle of a Renaissance. Our school system is very much designed to produce specialists in the sciences and specialists in the arts, and it is superb at doing that. But we need now to retool to produce Renaissance men and generalists, men and women who are encyclopedists. The obvious need today, study of literacies, compare and contrast, in the way similar perhaps to the way we studied comparative literatures a generation ago. Purposes include easy access to all fields, which will enable us to go from one to another. Seeing each literacy as a mode of culture, arriving at each at a set of skills or approaches that will cross from one to another, such that they bring broad application and are usable in any field. Such a tool set already exists in the arts. Any artist at a certain level can move freely into any other art and begin work. And we all know this. The alphabet is in demise right now. We need another system. The world is not going the way of the alphabet. It's going away from the alphabet. Now, this raises a prospect that troubles me as a literary man, as I did my work in English literature. If we take away all acquaintance with the alphabet, what happens to our accumulated literature and literary tradition? We are alienated from it. Just to exactly the same degree as, let's say, we're alienated from programs to run Commodore 64s or early computer programs. Who uses floppy disks now? And so that kind of alienation, it's there, but we just don't have access to it. I'm worried about that. I think we need to think in our thinking about the future of literacy what we do by way of a writing system. Two things come to mind immediately, and I'll throw them out as suggestions. One, I suggested last week, learn the Chinese character. It is not tied to the sound system, so you can write any language with it. And anybody can read Chinese without speaking Chinese. It's not a condition. However, that's not going to solve this problem. So I would propose that maybe we look into the possibility of constructing a syllabary to bridge whatever we're going through into whatever we arrive at. We need also the full tradition. If I were training somebody today, I would give the same advice my father gave when people said, "What should I study?" He always said, "Study languages. Pick up languages. Can't go wrong." Each language is an organ of perception. Each language is a system of awareness. Ezra Pound used to say, you don't know your own art or your own poetry until you know the poetry of at least one other culture. Until you've been outside and looked at your own culture from the outside, you can't really say you know it. This is the basic principle in also Through the Vanishing Point. Learn at least two languages. One ought to be contemporary, perhaps one classical, one of the languages of scholarship, like Latin or Greek, German. Learn how to read images from the arts. Our old phonetic literacy, instead of serving as the functional basis of our culture, now has a new life as counterculture. If you're literate, you're part of the counterculture. That has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? It opens up a lot of possibilities. Our problem now is essentially a grammatical one. We have to learn to read the language of forms. All forms, not just those that we have on the table at present. New ones appear now every 2 or 3 years, major new ones. My students tell me they are alienated from their younger brothers and sisters. I say, how much younger? They say 3 years, 4 years. They're so different, man, I don't know what's going on in their heads. Tools in this enterprise, practical criticism, formal cause. The grammatical tradition enabled the reading of both books, the book of nature and the written book, based on the notion that both were speeches. The same tools and techniques of exegesis would work on each book, they found. Practical criticism makes the switch easy from text to technology, and it makes the reader mobile. Marshall McLuhan's work explores all of the means of mounting the next phase of these studies. And last plug, I'd say space on poetry and painting is a paradigm for comparative study of literacies. Thank you very much.